Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Oh, yeah, it's another week, another opportunity to talk shop. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport, and I appreciate every single time we get to discuss some of the things that we're seeing. And, man, we're right here in the middle of it. You got minicamp wrapping up this week, so we'll get into some of the things that we're seeing there. You got conversations coming from the podium and things like that. A good Caleb Farley story to tell. That's something we'll get into. Got Run TMC, right? Chris Sanders, he'll come on and he'll talk some shop. I think we need to get into some of the things that have transpired over the air, and also obviously with Treylon Burks. So David James keeping it going.
Yes, sir.
Look, I want to get into Denard Wilson initially and just talk a little bit about how this defense, I think, is going to be. And I've, you know, for some time been kind of gathering in regards to press coverage and how this team has geared itself up for a total switch from before, man. And if you look at some of the numbers, you know, press coverage is something that, I mean, you don't even have to look at the numbers, frankly. I mean, you watch the games, you see it's third and six. And I mean, it got guys lining up 10 yards off the ball. And the thing that really kills me about that, David, is, you know, sometimes it'll come out that it's the player's choice. Other times it's the coach's choice. I asked Denard Wilson about that, and he was like, yo, we're pressing from day one, period. That's it. They're pressing. Now, are they going to be reckless with it? No. And he mentioned how being aggressive but not reckless is something that they're going to have as a mindset. So, look, if it's bunch formation and you got those switch releases and those types of things, you know, the bunch formation is designed to create space. So, you know, they probably won't press against that as much, although in that situation, you press the point man, right? So when I say bunch formation, I'm talking about like three receivers together. It's in a triangle shape. So you picture the guy at the tip of the triangle, he's the point man. A lot of times if you have the guy on him press while the other corners are off, that just disrupts the timing because everything is based off of his release. So you can still press in those situations. It's not always as successful. A lot of times you got to play off so that way you could go ahead and be able to, you know, switch off as the guys have their switch releases. And that's where you have the different coverages, you know, banjo. And you'll see those types of things where the guys behind their back give a move or a signal and they'll pick it up. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just straight up you in front of me, but I'm 8 to 10 yards back on third down. Can't have that. And in fact, just to give you some numbers on that, right? The Titans last year overall, well, actually since 2022, I did this to kind of base it off of Roger McCreary because he's the one common factor in all of this, right? And you'll see what I mean in a moment. But since 2022, when McCreary came into the league, the Titans pressed 33% of the time. That's the 29th least time. Now, they pressed half of the time, 50% on third down. So that was the 27th lowest. So what do? Denard Wilson, he comes in and he says that he wants to attack the ball with violence. He says that, you know, he wants obnoxious communication. And he says they want to be a defense that really goes at it. And the initial way on the outside that they're going to do that is through press coverage. Here's Denard Wilson on how he wants his cornerbacks to be connected at the line of scrimmage.
Intentional for me. For me, I believe press or less. Like, I want them to line up, and I want them to be in front of receivers and challenge the receivers. Ultimately, in this game, if you get free access, it's easy for the quarterbacks to complete balls. So what I do is I want to create hesitation at the line of scrimmage and make them earn it the hard way. Make them earn it, throw the 50-50 ball. But everything else, we're going
to
challenge.
How do you approach that? Do you leave it open to them to do it, or you telling them?
From day one, it's we press everything. Period.
You love that energy, man. You got to love the energy. It feels good when you hear that, you know what I mean? And I think as a player, as a cornerback, you love your coach to say that, you know, we're pressing, period. That's what we're doing. And that's him entrusting you to be better than the man in front of you. And that's all you want as a player. All you want is for your guy to trust you to be the better player. And that's what's happening in those situations. And so when he says we're pressing from day one, period, well, one of the big things that you have to do is have the guys that excel with that. And that's what I love about looking at how this team has been built in the secondary. And I remember talking to Steve Jackson, the first availability that we had. He's the DB coach. And I asked, I'll pull him aside and say, coach, not for anything, but man, like, it was so much off coverage on 3rd and 5 and 3rd. He said, oh, no, we ain't going to do that. We're going to be aggressive. And he was like, you saw the guys that we brought in. And I say, you know what? That's what you want to hear. So one of the guys that was brought in, and this is to go back to the 2022 thing, was L'Jarius Sneed. Now, Sneed came in, obviously, from the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Denard Wilson wants the press coverage. Now, no team pressed more over the last 2 years than the Kansas City Chiefs. They pressed 83% of the time they were in press coverage. Now, on third downs, that percentage went up even higher, 85% of the time, both top numbers for the NFL. So you bring in Sneed, a guy who you saw the Tyreek Hill video, right? I mean, this dude relishes the opportunity. Matter of fact, he said when I asked him about it, he said he wants to get his hands on people. He wants to get physical with them throughout the routes. Those are the things that he wants to do. Perfect match there. Then you spin it to Chidobe Awuzie. And it's funny because, you know, after I asked the question on Wednesday, all of a sudden, like, all of these press coverage questions are coming out. And Chido got bombarded with them. It's funny. Here was his response, you know, after they continuously asked him about press coverage. And I get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you guys were used to, but I mean,
a lot of coverage.
People play press coverage.
Third and two, playing 7 yards off the ball.
People play press coverage. It's not like a this new age, like people play because press coverage, and you know, yeah, people play press coverage. So
I mean, there you have it. He was clearly surprised by all the press coverage questions, and I mean, I get it. You know, it's something that we do need to discuss and ask, and I think, you know, it's only right. Because, I mean, look, it was just bad. And this team, you know, third downs, passing, everything, it was not good, you know. And that's not to say that press coverage is essential to having good pass coverage. In fact, Denard Wilson, when he was with the Eagles, you know, they pressed, I think it was like the 28th least time, but they led the league in passing yards allowed at 171. Now, coincidentally, the Titans that year were at 274, a whole 100 yards more and dead last. But nevertheless, I mean, it just goes to show you that it's not mandatory to press. But what you want to do at this point, and especially when, like, look, this Titans team, like, they don't have a group of pass rushers that, you know, are the very best in the league. So if those guys on the outside could be connected, that gives an extra bit of time in order for the guys rushing the passer to get home. And, in fact, Harold Landry, you know, that was something that he had brought up because I asked him specifically, like, you know, how does having these guys press, like, how does that help you as a pass rusher?
Oh, it helps a lot. I mean, you just got to keep your foot on the gas as a pass rusher with those guys back there. The quarterbacks, you take away that first option, and he's holding the ball. It creates so many opportunities for us up front to go out there and be productive. It should help us a lot.
It will absolutely help a lot because, again, you know, it gives them that extra second to get to the quarterback. And when, you know, and actually it happened. And that gives me the opportunity to bring up a guy that I wanted to talk about in Gabe Judy Lolly. Gabe Judy, I'll just call him that. Man, so last week on the Wednesday 7-on-7, he came up And I noticed, I kept noticing 32. I'm like, who is this guy? And I really like how he's right up there on the line of scrimmage. He's not giving the free release, man. I'm impressed. So then I said, well, let me keep watching him. And sure enough, I was watching him. And Treylon Burks was the receiver. And Treylon tried to release off the line. And he, you know, he gave him that one-hand stab. And then he jammed him, you know, not out of bounds, but he jammed, like, took him out the play. We'll put it that way. And you saw Levis have to go to the next receiver, right? And it was just that extra second that he had to go continue his progression. That gives a pass rusher an opportunity to get home, right? And so you have him press cover. And that's the thing. You got an undrafted free agent rookie coming in and pressing like that. And that's just like a testament to the belief that Wilson is establishing. And oh, by the way, Wednesday was a really good day for the Titans defense. Black Air Force Ones, man. You know, Denard Wilson his gear on was let you know that it was bad intentions. I said that to him. He joked about it. But, yeah, I mean, there was a reason why they looked good. And, you know, it was low red zone. Look, these guys have been able to really attach themselves to receivers. And I think, you know, when you're looking in a low red zone, it makes it that much easier. That's something I want to get into with Chris when we talk next segment. But, I mean, it was a good showing, right? So another thing that you have to talk about, though, with the guys on the outside attaching themselves and connecting to receivers at the line, not giving that free release for the quick passing game. Because remember that period of time where it was like teams were throwing a ball in like 2.4 seconds against the Titans, you know, and it was always because it's just 1-2, boom, 1-2, boom. And that's just the way it was, a free release. 1-2-3 sometimes steps off the line and they're right there able to catch the football and make something happen with it. And that is something that they're going to try to eliminate. And remember the guys in the middle, like the interior guys, you know, they were relied upon. They had to get match hands with the quarterback, try to bat it down. So this is going to help them too. And speaking of the interior pass rush, I really like what Denard Wilson said from that perspective too, because here's the thing. Matter of fact, let's hear what he says, and I want to touch on this when he's done.
Well, you know, I think, you know, we talk a lot on DBs, but the game is won and lost in the trenches. And the biggest thing is like we talk about edge rush. You really want to dominate the offensive line through the A and B gaps. Because when you dominate the offensive line through the A and B gaps, there's no step-up lane for the quarterback. And if no step-up lanes, and if we go back to the corners being connected at the top of the route, no step-up lane, where is it for the quarterback to throw?
So, again, where is there for the quarterback to throw? And this is why, you know, you see a lot of guards getting money. This past offseason, like, guards got paid big time. They got paid. You look at the tackles, Jeffrey Simmons, Dexter Lawrence, you know, Quinnen Williams. All these guys are getting paid too, Christian Wilkins recently. So there's a premium that's placed on interior pocket protection and pass rush. That's why you see a Peter Skoronski being the 11th pick. And I know Stillman, he'll have a guard. Well, listen, guard has become a very important position. That guard center, guard triangle is just as important as the outside. Why? Because as Denard Wilson said, you have outside pass rushers, you could just wash them down. Now, sometimes you have those guys who are just able to get off the ball and like they'll wreak havoc, you know, on the outside, just period, your special pass rushers. But typically you can wash them down and a quarterback steps up in the pocket. He can't do that when you're pushing the pocket back into his face. And then another thing you look at, right? I think there were 12 to 13 defensive tackles selected in the first two rounds. So we're talking about 13 out of 64 players. 13 out of 64, 12 to 13, somewhere in that double digits. That position is important. I asked Brian Callahan last week about the guardian cap. Hey, here's a good example, right? I asked him about the guardian cap. And he said, yeah, you know, an unintended benefit from that is because we know stay away from the quarterback during practice. But sometimes you get that pressure on the interior, and he saw where his quarterback hit his hand on the interior lineman's helmet. But because it was a guardian cap, it was all good. You see? That's why it's important. Quarterbacks can't step into their throws when the pocket's getting pushed back into their lap. They're afraid to hit their hand on the helmet. And then also, like, what's the first thing? If you're dropping back, you're in the pocket, the first thing you see is going to be what? What's in front of you. So if that person in front of you is getting pushed back into your lap, guess what? Not a pleasant experience. So those are some of the things I wanted to touch on. This defense, man. Denard Wilson said they want to be violent in their approach. I think that's exactly what they're going to be. I can't wait to watch them execute. And anytime somebody asks me about the record or, you know, what is the most exciting part of this team, I'm pointing to the defense because there's so much that can be improved upon and could be changed. And then the guy leading the show. What more can you say? So we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back, talk a little more of this with the Run TMC. Hey, this is Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans. ESPN Bet has fans covered from every shot, every goal for the biggest moments on the road to the championship. It's the exclusive sportsbook at ESPN, the only place to find special offers and promotions from your favorite ESPN shows and personalities throughout the playoffs. New users can get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call or text TN Redline 800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for details.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run from the DMT. For you. Fresh.
The lights dim. And now, coming to you live from Indianapolis, Indiana, starting at power forward. Your Indiana Pacers from Euclid High School. Number 5, Jermaine O'Neal.
Oh, wow. And now, starting for your Chicago Bulls, Orlando Woolridge.
Hello to darkness, me.
Y'all do look alike, man. Y'all got the same eyebrows.
And you wear the same goggles as he did. Old James Worthy looking fool.
Man, what'd you call me last week? Michael Cooper?
Michael Cooper. Yep. Shoop.
What's cracking like it, man? What's going on in camp, man?
Hey, nothing. You know, Thursday's camp was a pretty solid showing for the offense. They bounced back from it. And I tell you, it's funny, you know, I told Denard Wilson before they went out there, you know, I looked at his outfit. I said, oh, man, you got the all black on and the black forces on.
I said,
you must be out for blood. And he just started laughing. And sure enough, they went out there and it was a low red zone and low red zone period. And the defense looked really good. And you know,
yeah.
But the offense bounced back today. And that's what I want to get into, actually,
because
I think, you know, the stat keeping and those types of things at minicamp, to me, it's unnecessary. And I think it can put out an unnecessary picture. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on just, you know, what you've seen that has been put out there in regards to Wednesday's practice, and I'm not sure if you got to see from Thursday.
Yeah. You know, everybody's talking about Will Levis, you know, because just like you said, everybody's talking about, 3-for-10 and, you know, 4-for-10. All that stuff is great, but when you're in the red zone, this is what we got to understand. There's not a lot of space. So a lot of times the secondary doesn't have to cover because they got the back of the end zone, you know, as another man. And I think that one thing we got to really understand also is that Will Levis is going through his progression, mm-hmm. and one of his progression is throwing the ball away.
Yes.
So now, you know, when you have tight coverage, you don't want to make a mistake and throw it into a window and cause an interception. So what you want to do is throw the ball away. Listen, throw it in the lake and leave it another day.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? And when you have an incompletion and it's just, yeah. you know, stated that, you know, he was X for X, what yeah. is overlooked is that in some cases a throwaway is doing the right thing. I yes. think that's the key yeah. part. And not only were they in the red zone, this is low red zone. So we're talking about 10 yards and in. In this case, on Wednesday, they were 8 yards outside of the end zone. So you're looking at that, and everything is ultra condensed there. Route concepts are
right.
restricted.
Absolutely.
There's not as much you could do. And so if he gets the ball and he's looking, and remember, this is a defense that is really, really focusing on chatter at the line of scrimmage. No free releases, none of that. Like, they're challenging. And so as you see this happen, Levis has to go through the progressions, and if it's not open, he throws it away, and that's what he's supposed to do.
You know, and I agree with you 100%, is, you know, when you get into more of the red zone, when you, like, say you go 50, or I'm sorry, about 10 going in, not nine times out of 10, but sometimes you can go a little bit of man-to-man because you don't really need to go zone because you have the back of the end zone.
Exactly.
And that's what people got to understand. And another thing people got to understand, too, is there's a lot of bodies moving around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's going to be hard for receivers to get open when there's not a lot of space. You can't run a go route, you know, at the 7 or 8 yard line. You got to catch like slants, hitches, bubbles, you know, run the ball, things like that. So I think that we can't get overexcited that Will Levis is 4 for 10. We just got to understand what's going on in him, because I was on the radio the other day, you know, and I didn't see practice. And the first thing, you know, they were telling me that, you know, that Will Levis was 4 for 10. And in my mind, what I said is, dang, he's got to be consistent. But understand that they were in the red zone, it's a totally different ballgame. It's stickier coverage. You know, there's so many bodies moving around. So we got to understand that a throwaway is good because you can live to fight another down.
Yeah, and that's not to excuse it, right? Because, look, he had to throw the ball away. That's not good for the offense, right? It's telling you that nobody got open. So it's still a loss for the offense. But the thing is, and this is something that I find happening so much, is that there's an overreaction to something. Take it for what it was. Okay, great play by the defense. That is sticky cover. That's what I put in my notes. Sticky coverage by the defense. You know, that's what it was. And the offense, the next day, they turned around and they got things a little bit better. The tight ends were catching seams. And, you know, Levis had some good throws.
Yeah.
Mason Rudolph had some really good throws there. He hit who was it? I think it was Wiley on the seam route. You know, he hit Chig. Like, he had a solid. The offense won on Thursday. So you're going to have that give and take.
And then also, too, TD, this is what we got to understand also, and I know you understand this, is when you're going on 7-on-7, everybody knows it's a pass.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Everybody knows it's a pass.
Yeah.
They don't have to get the play fake in the back and the linebackers suck up. They don't have to suck up because they know it's a pass. So they can just stay in their zone, watch for crossing routes because there's no threat to run. So we got to take that in consideration. And I need to apologize, too, because when I first heard it yesterday on the radio that, you know, Will Levis was 4 for 10 and all this, and he threw it in the lake, my first instincts was, oh, my gosh, you know, he's got to be consistent. But when you're telling me that they're in the red zone, now it's a whole different ballgame. Now I have to change my thinking up because there's so many variables that are going on. Stickier coverage. You got to throw the ball away. So many moving parts. And when you have that situation, now you understand why he had to throw the ball away. And now I understand why he had to throw one in the lake. So now it makes my perspective better.
And think about how much more corners are able to sit on routes. Like, one of the things you always say is sell every route the same, right? You sell the 9. You know, you can't sell the 9 when you're on the 8-yard line. You know, so it does change things. And again, I'm not excusing the performance by the offense. They absolutely have to get better. But the defense, I'm telling you, from, you know, Trey Avery to Caleb Farley to Gabe Jeudy.
Oh, I heard he's balling.
Jeudy is He had coverage on Deion. They tried to run like a quick fade, and he got his hands on the 1-0 on Hopkins and kind of rolled him out of bounds, and Hopkins was mad, and he kicked the pylon. This young fella he's very impressive. Now, we'll see when the pads come on. But The thing is, again, with this whole throwing the ball in the lake, look, it hit in the end zone or beyond the end zone, bounced a couple times, and went over the fence. Like, it happens. Again, it's from the 8-yard line. Because I know, I think Caroline was on, the Jarrett versus Joe, and she was like, he's throwing it over. Listen, perspective and context is so critical. And I understand, we want to rush and make a joke and all this, that, and the third. But look, like, he didn't literally throw the ball in the lake. All right. But
here's the thing, TD. Then also he's in a lose-lose situation. And when I say this, let me explain it to you, is if he throws the ball away, they're mad because he throws it away. What if he throws an interception? Then now they're going to be even upset because, you know, the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator is always going to tell you protect the football. When I say protect the football, you know, the windows get really tight in the red zone, so you don't want to force anything in there, because if you force something in there, all of a sudden, you know, a hand gets in there, it pops up, you get an interception. So instead of him throwing it away and live another down, now you got a turnover at the 8-yard line, and you don't want that in the red zone.
Yeah, and there were a couple times he, you know, had some nice tight window throws. You know, he hit Tyler Boyd on a quick route across the middle, and he hit Tony Pollard too. Now Pollard probably would have, you know, got his head knocked off by Chance Campbell in regular situation. You know, and that's something that Levis has to, you know, kind of get together, because there were a couple times on Thursday where he hung some guys out to dry too, and you don't want to have that. And I think just overall the offense has to, you know, they have to catch up. Malik Willis had a really tough day on Thursday. He missed some throws that he should have made. He almost got one of the receivers killed. He overthrew Jaquan Jackson a couple of times. Like, it was a bad outing. Mason Rudolph had an off target throw as well, but you know he did have the deep ones. He hit Kyle Phillips down the sideline for a beautiful throw. Yeah. So you did see some success from the offense there.
Yeah,
I want to talk about Treylon Burks though. Because here's the thing, one of Levis's completions, he hit Nick Westbrook at Kenny. It was a nice throw, man. One of those deep crossers from the left side to the right side, and Burks was on the right side, and he cleared it out, and like he exploded off of the ball, cleared it out, took the DB and the safety with him, and WI came right underneath. Boom! It was a completion.
Uh-huh.
Treylon Burks, his effort. You know, obviously, you know, we had the comments from Trevor Maddich. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that, and I'm going to talk about the good, I'm going to talk about the bad. First, I'm going to talk about the good. I mean, and, you know, Nick Holtz talked about that ever since he stepped in the building, he's had an A-plus effort. That's number one. His effort's been great. You know, he's catching the ball. He's doing everything he's supposed to do. But then on the flip side, this is what Burks has to understand. He's still auditioning. Mm-hmm. He's still auditioning. You can't afford, and I say this in a respectful way, you can't afford to take a day off, because you got to remember, everybody's looking at everything you do. They're watching your attitude in the weight room. They're watching your attitude in the locker room. They're watching your attitude in the meetings. They're watching your attitude when you walk on the field. So when you get out there and they ask you to play gunner, and your body language is like, man, I don't want to do this. Or they ask you to run a certain route or a clear route, and you're like, man, I don't want to do this. Basically, you're giving them the leeway to say, you're not going to be a part of this team. So what you want to do, Treylon Burks, is play so well to where, you know, Brian Callahan, you know, Tolbert and Nick Holtz say, you know what? This guy's playing so well. He gives so much a good effort. Let me find a way here for him to be on the field. I don't care if they go in a 10 personnel, that's one back, zero tight ends, and four wide receivers, to put him in a slot and let him make some plays. Why? Because of your effort, and you're doing absolutely everything correct. So now, here's the thing, and we use this basketball term all the time, the ball is in your court. What you have to do is you got to give them a reason to not just put you on the field, but to make you be on the field. Why? Because of your effort, your attitude, and your hustle. That's the different part of what I was talking about.
Yeah, and here's the thing, because there's this narrative that the Titans are doing everything they can to just, you know, sensationalize and over positive talk on Treylon Burks. That's not the case. Right. You look, Nick Holtz, I asked Nick Holtz specifically about Treylon Burks. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, the guy's got all the talent. He's you know, big, he's fast. But everything Treylon gets, he's going to have to earn. So,
whoa.
Yeah. And so when you caboose a compliment with that statement, yeah, everything he gets, he's going to have to earn. Ooh. That lets you know that, look, man, in a drill, catch it, snap your head upfield, and take a couple steps, finish the drill with force and authority. It goes beyond, in my opinion, just running a clear out route the way you're supposed to, and running as a gunner the way you need to. Each and every second that you are breathing, you have to make sure that it's showing that, look, man, I'm taking this personally, and I am putting the absolute best foot forward.
You know, and we always say that term, never let them see you sweat. So what you do, man, is, you know, even though inside you, listen, and I'm going to be honest, sometimes we got to understand also is we have feelings. Mm-hmm. we as football players, we have feelings. He was at Arkansas. He was the man. Now he comes to Tennessee Titans, and right now he's the man. So I understand he has feelings. So what you have to do is you got to channel that energy. And the way you channel that energy is, even though you're sweating inside, even though you're angry inside, even though, you know, you feel like, you know, they don't want you to be a part of the office, don't let them see you sweat. When I say that, have great body language, do everything full speed. And I remember 1999, they brought Yancey Dickman in. 1997, they brought Yancey Dickman in, Kevin Dyson, had a slew of receivers. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm over here. I made the all-rookie team. I led the league in yards per catch 2 years in a row, and all of a sudden, I'm this no good. So what I did is I had to channel that energy. But that didn't nullify the pain in my heart. I was like, man, this is awful. But what I had to do is I had two choices, to get better or get bitter. And I chose to say, you know what? I'm going to play so well that y'all gonna have to play him. And that's what happened. That preseason had five touchdowns in two preseason games.
That pretty much seals it. I mean, you know, and that's the thing. I think it goes beyond the athleticism. I think it's one of those situations where, and I've said it before, this deal that's going on, it's opening up Treylon Burks, his body, and looking inside, and you're going to see what his heart is built from.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to see, because here's the thing, man. And I know he's taken, because I talked to him. I know he's pissed off about it. Like, I know he's upset.
I know.
He's told me, literally, he's taking it personally. But my thing is just, how do you respond?
That's it,
and
man.
The big thing is, if you're taking it that personally, you can't give Trevor Maddich, who saw you one time, an opportunity to have this instant evaluation. Now, Trevor,
big words.
Trevor has to know better. He has to know better. And I understand, because look, I get disgusted. You get disgusted. But he has to know better than to take it to the extreme of saying, hey, he should be cut. We all know that that's not the case. The man should not be cut. Is Trevor right to be disgusted at the effort that he saw? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure Trevor understands the importance of opportunities and how you have to maximize each one you get. And he didn't do that on that day. And he cannot afford to do so.
But you know what, TD? You said something so profound. This goes beyond football, and I'm going to give you a perfect example. When A.J. Brown was going through some situations off the field, nobody knew that he was dealing with situations. Let the player development guy go sit down and talk to Treylon Burks and say, listen, man, what can I do to help you? What can I do? Now, let's just put the football stuff away. What can I help you to mentally, to help you be successful on the football field, but also in life? And once he handles that and grabs the bulls by the horn, then maybe that body language will change. And I'm not saying he has bad body language. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it'll help him progress into what he needs to be. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. And the thing is, it comes out every once in a while, but it just has to be more consistent.
Okay, let me give a perfect example, and I know we got to go, but you remember the situation with Vince Young, right? Vince Young was the man in high school. He was the man at Texas. He won a national championship. Then he gets with the Titans, immediately has instant success. He makes the all-rookie team and all-rookie, all that stuff. You know, all this hype's going on. Then he has a bad year, and then he throws his shoulder pads in the stands. Mm. Because the reason why I share that is because sometimes guys don't know how to handle a situation when it goes to adversity. Yep. Maybe this is the first time that Treylon Burks has went through adversity and he doesn't know how to handle it. So now if I'm a player development guy, I'm a position coach, I'm going to pull him to the side and say, listen, what can I do to help you? You help you with this area. Now that translates to the field. And now you got something that you're working with.
Yeah. It goes beyond just football, folks. There's a lot to it.
Yes, it does.
And I just think that we have to continue to see how this progresses. He's working as a gunner, so we'll see, you know, special teams. I think he's going to be a big part of special teams as far as in the return game, too. I could see him having a role in kick returns. Ooh. And that's something they're going to continue to figure out as they go about scheming and strategizing with this new kickoff rule. So we'll definitely continue to be on touch with that, on top of that, rather, and in tune with that. And man, I that was a discussion that we had to have, though, so I'm glad we were able to do that and bring some clarity and understanding to it, because context is always important. And folks,
absolutely,
listen, you never get too high on what goes on in June and July, and you never get too low. You recognize it for what it is and understand it and allow that to be background information for how things end up carrying on in the season. Like, you don't always have everything. Doesn't have to be a prediction. It doesn't have to be a prediction. You could look at it and just see how things continue to evolve.
Yep. Yeah, well, man, just to give you a prediction, man, me and my wife was watching TV, right? And this show came on. First of all, I was watching the Jefferson, was watching Good Times. Then this one show came on, and this guy walks across the screen. She's like, I can't believe TD played in a sitcom. I'm like, baby, that's not TD. That's Benson.
I want to tell you a little bit about Soho Footwear over there in Hendersonville. You need your sneaks, your J's, whatever you should need, man, definitely make sure you go check them out. You mentioned TD10 and you get $10 off of $100. And they have a wide selection. So if you're a guy who or girl who already has a nice catalog of J's and Air Force Ones, et cetera, they'll still have something for you. Just go check them out. And if you're brand new to it, hey, just let them know. They'll guide you in the right direction. So definitely make sure you check out Soho, S-O-H-O, 615.com. And again, they're in Hendersonville.
This is Caleb Farley. I'm talking with TD. God's plan.
I can't do this on my own. All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We want to keep this thing rolling, man. We got into a whole lot. Talked a little defense, talked a little offense. Hey, man, you know what they say, right? There's three phases to the game. So let's get into a little bit of special teams. And I tell you what, special teams is becoming an even bigger part of the game now with some of these rule changes, right? And look, every time the ball is kicked off, it's not going to automatically be a return, but there's a lot of encouragement to kicking it inbounds, so to speak, like within the area for allowing a returner to catch the ball and return it. So it's in essence become a different offensive play, and it's crazy how it's impacting so much, right? You got some of these personnel people and coaches, they're looking at things differently as far as how they bring in players. They're even looking at what players they're using in different situations. Whereas before, you know, it was like, man, ain't no starters going back there. It's not happening. Now there are opportunities where you may see starters back there. And that's something I wanted to ask Brian Callahan, because he was overseeing, obviously, the roster for the first time as the head coach. And I wanted to get his input on the return rules and how it's kind of altering the way that they have to evaluate players.
Colt's doing a really good job of researching and playing with different lineups and combinations of what that might look like. We don't know yet. That's the hard part. There's a lot of unknowns, and I think there'll be a little bit of chaos in the preseason with it, just in terms of everybody trying different things. There's a lot of different lineups and personnels that you can mess around with and see what might work. And again, we won't really know until we see it live in an NFL game. But there's some opportunities for some different guys to do things in that particular phase of the special teams.
I've heard some people refer to that as like an additional offensive play. Mm-hmm. So that being said, does that change? Like you mentioned, guys who are non-starters, mandatory playing special teams. But does that change where you have the potential to put a starter back there fielding kicks?
Absolutely. I think you'll see a lot of guys. I think you'll see some running backs back there around the league. You'll see some designated returners. You'll see a different style of returner than maybe the traditional kickoff returner. You might see guys that are better with the ball in their hands and maybe aren't returners in a sense that they're the punt returner or the kickoff returner. There's a little bit more flexibility for the play because it's going to be so unique and shorter distance and shorter coverage. And the ball's going to get in their hands quicker. So there's definitely places for guys that maybe not in the past would be your traditional kick returner that they're a starting running back, a receiver, or they have some skill with the ball in their hand and they have a chance to maybe make an impact there.
So why is that important? I think it's important because you look at a guy like Treylon Burks, right? And Brian Callahan went on to say a little bit later, he admitted that Treylon Burks is lined up as a gunner, but I think, you know, Treylon Burks is a guy that could end up back there. You talk about someone with talent, with the ball in their hands. I mean, look, you know the Alabama game that he had, you know, with Arkansas. And you know the different plays that he made in college. And you've seen, actually, you know, there have been some plays, you know, where, like, he's got the ball on end arounds, you know, on jet sweeps or other opportunities to quickly catch the ball and make something happen. He's somebody that I could see coming up in that situation. And I mean, again, like Callahan said, that's something that is going to have to happen for him to earn a not a spot, you know, on the roster, but to be active on game. Like, you have to double up, you know. No longer is he the number two receiver, right? You're the number 3/4, more four. You got to double with something else. And I think that's obviously the case with Nick Westbrook and Kenny and a slew of other guys who are going to be in the competition. So that being said, there are going to be opportunities for him in that kickoff or kick return game. And I think, you know, when you have a player of that caliber, when you have a Tajay Spears, when you have a Tony Pollard, when you have these guys, you got to start to strategize and put scheme together. And that's something we actually got to speak to Colt Anderson, who's a special teams coach. We got to speak to him for the first time, and that's something I wanted to get his insight just as far as how you're going about strategizing for. Here's Colt Anderson.
Going to be guaranteed to return. I mean, there's still the touchback factor. You know, on a regular touchback where the ball lands in the end zone and it's down, this ball's going to be spotted at the 30. If the ball skips in the end zone, it's going to be spotted at the 20 when you down it. So, you know, I think the touchback phase is still play a big factor, but as far as returns, there's going to be more returns. The play's going to look a lot different than it did last year. The play's going to look a lot different. You know, we're trying to figure that out right now, what specifically it's going to look like, the timing. As far as skill set, who's going to be out there on the kickoff side of things, and then on kickoff return, what type of return we're going to have, you know. So we're playing with that right now, trying to figure out what that's going to look like.
Cool. So it's still a filling out process. And one of the things he also said, like, they're going to look at the XFL, right, and see, because that's where the rule change came from. But it's crazy, like, they merged, and you have the UFL now, and that rule was given the boot. But there is a year of film that they could go back to and try to find ideas. That keyboard sound, that's John Glennon. You know, he got those heavy fingers, man, typing. That's what the keyboard sound next to me is. But, yeah, I think it's pretty exciting, you know, when you look at this play, and it's going to be, like I said, another opportunity to see something happen as opposed to just a boring old, like, how many times do you see it, man? Like, you know, the stadium's going crazy, and it's the game is about to start, and, you know, everybody's standing there, and they kick the ball off, and you see the returner just put two hands in the air, you know, two fists, meaning like it's a touchback, you know, that don't field it. We're just going, it's going to touch back. We'll take it. That's not always going to be the case anymore. So that's pretty exciting to have that. And anything new, I mean, I'm not normally one for rule change, but this is one that I definitely, you know, I smile about because it's intriguing. And speaking of smiling, Brian Callahan, he talked about Treylon Burks, you know, obviously being a gunner, but he also mentioned Caleb Farley, right? Because Caleb Farley has lined up as a gunner. And look, he's still pretty fast, right? So, you know, that's something that may be a good role for him, a good position for him to,
work his way back onto the field. But man, you talk about adversity. Like, I couldn't imagine like all the things that like this dude has been through. You know, obviously he's lost both his parents. He's like, it's just there's a lot that he's been through, right? The injuries, losing athleticism because of the injuries. But as Brian Callahan said, all the adversity he'd been through would turn most people away. But here he is back. Like, this dude took part in every OTA. He took part in all three mini camp practices. Got to shout him out for that. And we actually got to speak to him for the first time this season, right? You know, on Thursday, we got to speak to him. And, you know, he revealed something that I knew was the case. But man, it's definitely crazy, and it makes you really want to root for him. Listen to Caleb Farley here.
Man, I'm just so grateful. I've been feeling extremely grateful. I don't think you guys understand. I really truly believe I would never play football again, and just to be out here and be running around and practicing. I'm so grateful. You know, glory be to Jesus Christ and my Lord and Savior and Father God, because, like I said, I'm just grateful and happy to be out here. I'm telling you, man, God has been there to nudge me along in some very, very low and dark moments this past year and a couple years, just with my foot. And, well, that don't even matter. Just I'm grateful to be here practicing, and, you know, I have the mentality to look ahead and see opportunity in front of me, and anything can happen, and I know that to be true, and I believe that wholeheartedly. So, you know, I'm ready to come to training camp, not to participate, to come compete.
That's the thing. Ready to come to training camp, not to participate, but to compete. And you got to appreciate that, you know. And he started to get into a little bit about the foot. Like, it's just been so much for him, but he's weathered the storm, right? And he's back. And he later mentioned Chidobe Awuzie as a guy who's really, he connected to him. And Awuzie has helped him just from a mental standpoint. But I love what Awuzie said. He was like, man, that's a two-way street. Like, he helps me too. And I think any relationship that's truly beneficial is mutually beneficial. So it's good to see that there. And just to think, like, here it is, a guy that came out of, you know, came from Cincinnati. He came in there, and it, you know, he talked about how the thing that he loved about Caleb Farley that he saw immediately was his willingness to compete. And that dude, he likes to compete in everything. I've seen him in the locker room, you know, the different games and things they play. He likes to compete. So it's definitely right what Awuzie said. And then he also mentioned the adversity, and his, you know, he talked about how adversity, we all go through it, you know, some more than others, but really what it's about is how you respond. And look, Caleb Farley, he has responded. He has responded. He's still here. He's still standing. He was there speaking that day. He had a chain on with a charm, and it has a picture of his parents, you know, kind of sitting together. This man lost both of them. Like, been through it, man. He's been through it. And so it's just really encouraging and exciting to see him back out there. He has that youthful energy, and you could tell even as he talked, you know, you look in his eyes and you could see the happiness, not the satisfaction, because again, he doesn't want to participate, he wants to compete, but you could see the pleasure he has in being out there. And it's something that you gotta love about this game, right? You know, you gotta love that it's an opportunity for these guys to just do something that they really enjoy doing and get paid a lot of money to do it, you know. So definitely wanted to wrap it up on that note with Caleb Farley. And obviously next week there's only going to be so much availability. I believe it's Tuesday we'll have an opportunity to be out there on the field. I can't promise you much. We'll see what happens there. But, hey, I mean, you know, we'll be on top of it. So appreciate each of you tuning in. Definitely continue to rock with us. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.